Ring the bell, Braggy.
This is Movie Fighters. This is the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And you might say we're getting out in front of Halloween this month by watching something vaguely in the spooky arena. But we kind of don't know anything about it either. We just found it on Hulu.
Yeah, I thought this was a fan film. Because I'd heard of it. But I didn't think it was real.
It is called Daphne and Velma. It is a spin-off film of the Scooby-Doo series. According to Wikipedia, it is the fifth installment in the live-action Scooby-Doo film series.
Which is dubious, because all of those live-action Scooby-Doo films are not related.
I have seen zero of them, by the way.
I have seen one, and I wanted to talk about that here at the start before we dove into this. I have never actually seen the Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, Linda Cardellini, dude from Scream. Once. Matthew Lillard.
Despite being a huge fan of Linda Cardellini.
I love Linda Cardellini. Nothing but the best things to say about ER's own Linda Cardellini.
About, yes, Gravity Falls and...
Hawkeye's secret wife.
Hawkeye's... She's always good at everything. Linda Cardellini was Velma in those early films. It was the reason I almost ever watched one, but
It's a good reason to watch.
But I never have seen any of those live-action Scooby-Doo movies. This one is, in fact, considered to be the fifth installment. It came out this year.
Just recently.
The release date was May 22nd, 2018.
Yeah, so we are technically still in the summer in which this has come out.
Yes. So one of the non-theater most recent Movie Fighters movies we've ever done. Here's another weird detail about this. It was produced by Blondie Girl Productions, which is the production company of Ashley and Jennifer Tisdale.
Talking about High School Musicals? Ashley Tisdale?
High School Musicals, Ashley Tisdale, and Jennifer Tisdale was on Hannah Montana, I believe.
I am genuinely happy to hear that Ashley Tisdale is moving into producing. That delights me.
Oh, she was on... Okay, Jennifer Tisdale was in Bring It On, In It to Win It, which I know
that's right.
Of interest to you, Chris. She was not on Hannah Montana. She was in some Suite Life episodes. She's been on a lot of Disney Channel programming. Let's put it that way. But now she is fully a producer. She has not been in anything since like 2010.
If the production company is Ashley and Jennifer Tisdale, and they're the producers, who do you think is the Bialystok and who is the Bloom? I think Ashley's got to be the Bialystok, right?
I mean, Jennifer is the older sister, so it would make sense that she's the Bloom. It would make sense. Oh, wait, no, that goes the other way.
Yeah, it's the other way. Bialystok is Zero Mostel.
Yeah, that's
or Nathan Lane.
It's got to go the other way then. Jennifer's Bialystok.
What if Ashley Tisdale and Jennifer Tisdale did a producer's prequel or sequel about like the young producers?
Putting on
a High School Musical.
I would see it.
I would see it for now, this show.
Speaking of prequels, Daphne and Velma is in fact a prequel film. The tagline is, before Scooby-Doo, these BFFs had a clue.
Yeah, yeah.
There's high school in this.
So here's the thing. If this is indeed the fifth movie in a live-action Scooby-Doo franchise, which it is not, it's a first movie in the third Scooby-Doo live-action franchise. We'll get to that in a second. these movies are going backwards. Because the first two...
They're regressing.
The first two were adults. Freddie Prinze Jr., Linda Cardellini, Matthew Lillard, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Adults. Then the second
they were
two...
all around 30 when that movie was made.
Yeah, it was a post-Buffy time. Pre-Avengers.
Yes.
Probably concurrent with ER. But the Scooby-Doo The Mystery Begins and Scooby-Doo Curse of the Lake Monster were about those characters in high school. And they were not called Scooby-Doo 3 or Scooby-Doo 4, although apparently they are also known as such, according to the internet. This is going even further back so that there's no Shaggy, no Scooby, which is weird. And
Before Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, they had a clue, but it's before Scooby-Doo.
Do you think Scooby-Doo is not born yet in this movie?
This shit is the Gotham of Scooby-Doo. I just realized it. Because okay. They're trying to do a Scooby-Doo movie without Scooby-Doo. His name's in the title.
Is Scooby in 3 and 4?
Yes.
Is he
Scooby
a
is in... No, he is a... Like, Scooby is the age that Scooby-Doo is. He so is an adult dog.
So in the other movies, he's like a 20-year-old dog.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if that's breaking the fiction for you, Matt, also he can talk.
Look, talking dog I can accept. Immortal dog, we gotta talk about.
What do you think would be... Which one would you have an easier time accepting? And I think I know the answer to this because we've just gotten through it. Regular dog with a regular dog lifespan who can talk human language, or dog that is a regular dog with, like, dog thoughts and dog needs and dog secrets who is immortal?
It depends on the story. Because it's there from moment one in Scooby-Doo that he can talk.
Uh-huh.
There's, like... Scooby,
but you think it's also there for moment one that he will age and die?
Yes. That's why else would he be scared? Chris, fear is an integral part of Scooby-Doo.
Maybe no. Listen, maybe he's afraid because keep in mind he's afraid of ghosts, and who has more ghosts in their past than an immortal?
That's fair.
Who would the dead hate and envy more than anyone else is someone who could be untouched by the passage of time.
Here's what's wild about Scooby-Doo talking, and I can't believe we've gotten onto this tangent, but here's what's weird about Scooby-Doo talking. He's bad at talking for a dog, because Scrappy talks normal, like a human. Scrappy doesn't have any affectation to his speech.
Mm-hmm.
Scooby is stuck in dog talking. It's like dog evolution happened in one generation.
Well, I mean, it could just be that Scooby's got like a speech impediment.
I mean, that's true. I don't want to shame Scooby for that.
Yeah, I mean, like something like, or maybe Scooby, like we know very little about Scooby's past. Like Scooby might be like foreign and that's just his accent.
You know,
I don't know what accent that would be. But
it's some kind of dog accent that we humans don't understand.
I mean, he is a Great Dane, so
yes, you're not wrong. Okay, let's talk about the cast of Daphne and Velma.
I want to talk about these other Scooby-Doo movies. Okay. I want to explain why they pissed me off. I have actually seen both of the teenage ones, the ones that were Cartoon Network originals. Here's what made me mad. In the first one, ghosts are real. And that's a warning sign.
Okay, by the first one, you mean the third one?
But I mean the first of the Scooby-Doo The Mystery Begins, which is clearly a reboot and not part of the same franchise.
Okay, I have to look this up now. Were ghosts real in the previous Scooby-Doo movies?
I didn't see them. But like it says there were real demons in Scooby-Doo 1. But I thought the second one was all a plot.
They fought actual demons a demon named Zarkos.
Wild.
In the first Scooby-Doo film.
Which that is not like the premise of Scooby-Doo.
Daphne does the fighting, which seems like a funny nod to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes. Now, I'm not saying that all instances of the supernatural in Scooby-Doo, because it's not like there's not canonical precedent. There's the 13 ghosts of Scooby-Doo, obviously, which is really limiting how many episodes you can get out of a series. But regardless, I do think it is a bit of a warning sign. Here's where it made me mad, where it made me angry. Scooby-Doo Curse of the Lake Monster involves a Scooby and Vel, or not Scooby, involves a Shaggy and Velma romance, right? Much like Mystery Inc., a show of which I am a very big fan. But at one point, Velma, who, by the way, is played by Hayley Kiyoko, who super rules and is great, at one point she is possessed by a witch. They do the thing where, like, her connection to Shaggy, like, is strong enough to, like, break through the witch possession and bring her back to herself. Then at the end of the movie, they're like, yeah, but we just don't think it's going to work out, so we're not going to date anymore. And I'm like, hold the fucking phone. You can't do that. If you're going to do, like, if you're going to do the romance and then have it not work, that's one thing. That's whatever. If you're going to do the romance and then have the romance be so strong that it breaks through demonic witch possession, then you can't be like, but also it's not working out. That's not how that works. You can't break up after your love has been proven stronger than supernatural forces. That's fucked up.
Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed, the ghosts are fake.
Right, because Scooby-Doo 2, it's all like a plot by Scrappy. Like it's a revenge plot.
Maybe.
Or is that one?
I think Scrappy is the villain of the first one.
Okay.
The second one does the mask reveal thing, but then the villain's wearing a mask, then they're wearing a second mask.
Okay.
So there's a gag where they pull off the mask twice.
I think the only thing that connects the movies, like the first two movies with the high school era movies, is that they both posit that the Mystery Inc. is based out of a town called Coolsville, which I think also goes back to a pup named Scooby-Doo, which is where Scooby-Doo is a puppy.
Before he was granted immortality and or cursed.
Before he chopped off the head of another Highlander.
Yeah. Scrappy is the villain of the first movie. Or a villain of the first movie. Okay, I'm glad we got all that sorted out. Now to this movie that doesn't have Scooby-Doo in it at all. There are only three names listed as stars on Wikipedia. Sarah Jeffrey, who plays Daphne.
Mm-hmm.
She's on some Disney Channel shows. In a version, in a new, I guess they're redoing Charmed? She's on the new version of Charmed?
I did hear there was going to be a Charmed reboot, yes.
She was in the movie Descendants, the Disney Channel original movie.
That is the movie about like the children of all the fairy tale characters. It's kind of like Monster High, but live action and with the like all the Disney villains. Not even just like the ones who should go together. Like there's Carlos, the son of Cruella de Vil, and also the son of Belle and the Beast.
Sarah Gilman plays Velma.
Two Sarahs.
Double she is Sarah. The star of the Disney Channel series I Didn't Do It.
That's an interesting name for a series.
I can only think about when that was Bart's catchphrase when he was on Krusty's show. And then Vanessa Nicole Morano is in this movie as a character named Carol. She's third billed. I think we may know what that means. What's going on? What's going to be going on with Carol?
Yeah, I think Carol might be Carol might be up to no good.
But she has been in quite a few things dating back to the early 2000s. She was a working child and teen actress for quite some time. So she also provided additional voices in Finding Nemo. So Vanessa Morano has a pedigree. she's got her bona fides. Everybody else in the cast, I mean, I don't even recognize those three names. Everybody else in the cast, totally unknown to me. Nothing can be gleaned from finding out about the cast. The director of this movie also doesn't offer us many clues as to what it's going to be, but it is interesting that Susie Unicy directed this movie. She is an Iranian-American filmmaker.
Okay.
She won the 2014 Funny or Die Make 'em Laugh Award.
Interesting.
She has directed quite a few things, but I have heard of none of them. So, again, not a lot to go on as we head into watching Daphne and Velma.
I guess that's where we're at. About to watch a prequel that might be a reboot in this series that is Benjamin Buttoning. It's a way down to younger and younger iterations of these characters.
Can't wait for Shaggy Babies.
I think that's the next ICP movie, actually.
We're going to watch this movie. It's on Hulu if you want to watch it with us. But before we get into the movie, Chris, it's time for the hottest segment in all of podcasting.
That's true.
It's time for Snack Situation. Chris, what are you snacking on for Daphne and Velma?
Well, Matt, a couple things to report today. First of all, I'm probably not going to be snacking over much while we watch this movie because I did just have a breakfast / lunch at Biscuitville. As you know, Biscuitville is a local North Carolina chain.
That's right.
Of biscuit restaurants that closes at 2 p.m. because it's breakfast. It's kind of like not the Earth 3 Bojangles, because Bojangles will just give you a chicken biscuit at 9 p.m. if you want it.
It'll give you a chicken biscuit if they're open.
If they're open, yeah. But Biscuitville, they close at 2 because they got to make those biscuits chicken fresh. The thing I love about Biscuitville is that, you know how you go to a fast food restaurant and you go to like McDonald's and they're like, would you like to try whatever their new sandwich is today? Like welcome to McDonald's, would you like to try an Arch Deluxe?
A great reference from 1997.
Welcome to McDonald's, would you like to try a McJordan?
A McDLT. Let's go further. A McDLT.
Biscuitville has promotions like, when I pull up the window, they go, welcome to Biscuitville, do you want a spicy honey and chicken biscuit and a cheer wine? And I say, yeah.
Yeah, most of the time if I go to a drive-thru window and I get one of those promotions, I'm like, no thank you, here's what I want. If I'm at Biscuitville and they say honey, spicy biscuit, and cheerwine, I cannot say no to that.
Yeah, yeah. It's the best offer. So what I'm going to be having is coffee. I've got a pot brewing right now from local Counterculture coffee roasters that I'm going to be drinking because I'm very, very sleepy because I stayed up too late last night playing that new Spider-Man game.
It'll get you. It'll get you.
I had to get all them backpacks.
You had to get all them backpacks. They're important.
Yeah, because now I can dress up like my brother Ben. Ben Riley.
Here's a question for you, Chris. How dark's that roast?
It's a medium roast. I don't like a too dark roast.
I learned something interesting the other day.
Yes, hit me.
So there's a series of videos on YouTube by Epicurious.
Okay.
Where they bring on experts in different kinds of food or knives.
Oh, all right.
They put two of the thing that they're judging in front of them. And then based on the quality of that thing, they guess which one's more expensive. They did one with coffee. And they put a dark roast and a light roast in front of the coffee expert, and immediately the coffee expert said, oh, the light roast is probably more expensive, because a lot of times a dark roast coffee is roasted dark to hide imperfections and bad flavors.
Interesting. I did not know that.
A light roast is roasted light so you can taste it.
Mmm.
So people who like to be snobbish about drinking dark roasts, drop that on them sometime.
I'm going to be drinking a Counterculture Big Trouble mix, or Big Trouble roast, which is described as caramel, nutty, and round.
That sounds wonderful.
Clean, sweet, low-acidity coffees. Also, I do have a package of Halloween Oreos, because I buy them as soon as I see them in the store, because it's almost Halloween. And we're doing something that's almost Halloween-ish.
This is very nearly Halloween-ish, yes.
Yes. It's almost Halloween, and you know what that means.
It's almost Christmas.
It's almost Christmas.
Chris, my snack, speaking of creamy and nutty.
Yes, as we so often do.
Is, I also ate lunch, so I'm having kind of a dessert. I have a bag of individually wrapped Hawaiian Host Milk Chocolate Aloha Max.
Ooh.
These are creamy milk chocolate covered macadamias.
Ooh, I like it.
They're very tasty. I got these at World Market. These do not have caramel in them. There's a separate version called Caramax that have caramel. So this is just chocolate and macadamia nuts, but they're very good. And so I'm going to be snacking on these during the movie. Once again, if you would like to watch the movie along with us, you can do that on Hulu. This movie is available on Hulu. You are going to hear right now a musical interlude and an ad. We are going to watch the movie. Once those things are finished, we're going to come back and talk about Daphne and Velma. And we are back from watching Daphne and Velma, a surprisingly entertaining and fun film.
Matt, does this movie rule?
I think it does.
I think this movie might rule. I think this movie might be very, very good.
We said earlier that there weren't any clues from the cast or the director, but I think the fact that Susie Unice won 2014 the Funny or Die First Annual Make 'Em Laugh Award at the Los Angeles Film Festival, like, that was a well-deserved award. This movie is funny.
It's very funny. It's got, like, a lot of really good gags. Like, and the thing is, it's got a lot of really good gags of all kinds, because it's got really good sight gags, some good wordplay stuff. It's got really good bits of, like, protracted silences, which I know is a particular favorite gag of yours and mine.
Yes.
It has jokes about Velma murdering her robot child that come back, like, that it hits the rule of three. It comes back two times.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in this movie. There's a lot of clever lines. We also looked up the writers of this movie, and there's not a lot about them online. Their names are Kyle Mack and Caitlin Mears. The one thing that they worked on together is the Croods animated TV series,
which is on Netflix. It's a Netflix original,
which might secretly be funny based on this movie.
What if it is? We would never know.
We would never know. They also independently worked on various TV shows. Caitlin Mears wrote an episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead, which you can kind of see the sense of humor on that show reflected in this movie, just like brought down to, you know, PG level, you know? So I feel like we have a lot to say about this movie that's not plot related. But
yeah, I think you would agree with me if I said that, weirdly enough, the worst thing about this movie is the plot.
There's one other weak spot in the movie. We'll get to that in High Points and Low Points. But I want to run through the plot really fast.
Okay.
And then we can talk about some of the bigger picture stuff. Because I do think, I agree, I think this world, or this movie, builds a world and builds characters and does gags better than the plot. Better than constructing a plot. The plot is fairly by the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just run through that as quick as we can. First thing that happens is we see what amounts to a promotional video for Ridge Valley High. And what we learn about Ridge Valley High is that it's this subsidized school. It's like a magnet school.
Yeah.
Funded in part by a company called Bloom Innovative, which is this huge tech company that is run by a guy named Tobias Bloom. And it is the place where he beta tests all of his technologies on students, on teens, who are the most, you know, plugged in to technology.
It's Apple meets Amazon, basically. Like, it's a generic all-purpose high-tech firm.
It's every current tech company 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Because one of the main things that is, like, one of the main technological innovations in the movie, it's basically an iPhone, but it's thinner, and it doesn't have a back. It's just glass all the way through, which to me is one of the most baffling things, one of the most baffling pieces of technology that you see in stuff set in the future all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
Like on Black Mirror episodes, right? People have these phones that don't have a metal back. It's just glass. But who would want a phone that you can see through the back of? Where, like, if you're texting about, yeah, if you're talking shit about somebody on a text, everybody can see it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
I think that's an example of this movie's kind of weird near future aesthetic, because when we see the video for the school, and then that gives way quickly to one of the students featured in the video, who we will later find out is like a violin prodigy.
Yes.
Going down a hallway where the lights begin to flicker, she walks into a locker and vanishes. And then we get our title card.
In a burst of light. Yeah, that's the cold open, which leads to the title sequence. Which, I gotta say, the titles in this movie, the way they're designed, very neat.
Like, yeah, I like it.
Evocative of Scooby-Doo, a little retro, but also its own thing.
Yeah, I think this movie's biggest strength is that it's evocative of Scooby-Doo without quite being Scooby-Doo.
I said this as we were watching it, and this is a little bit of a giveaway for low points, but any attempt to do a Scooby-Doo thing in this movie outright is the weakest thing in the movie.
Yeah. Velma says Jinkies twice in this movie, and it's literally in the last act that they kind of remember, like, oh, right, she says a thing, doesn't she?
She says a thing, yeah.
Yeah. So we come back from those credits, though, and we see Daphne, who is basically vlogging, or maybe she's like a Twitch streamer. I don't know what the kids are into these days. Is she playing Fortnite?
She seems to be. She's not playing Fortnite.
She's like, hey, what's up, YouTube?
She's a YouTuber, I think.
Yeah.
She has an internet show, whatever it may be, a vlog, where she is talking about various mysteries and supernatural things.
Mm-hmm.
She's investigating. And then we find out that she, through that show, and through them both being internet sleuths, she knows Velma. They are friends.
Velma is her online BFF.
Yes.
Is what they say. And having watched this entire movie and it being the year 2018, we get a lot of, like, romantic subtext from the start. Like, a lot of these two should be dating subtext right from here.
What Daphne reveals to Velma in their quick Skype chat, which is actually Bloom chat in this movie, because every tech thing is a Bloom Innovative thing.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing that I wanted to say. Like, Velma's got like a triple monitor set up in her room, but Daphne has this computer that's like the base of an old iMac, like back when the iMacs had the base and the arm that would come up to the screen. But there's no screen; it's just a floating hologram.
Yeah, it's a rectangle with no frame around it.
Yeah. So I think that, again, a weird little near future aesthetic.
Also, what I think is a good touch in this movie is some subtle indicators that Daphne is very rich. And yeah. Velma is not poor, but her family is nowhere near off as well off as Daphne's family.
Yeah, the designs of their respective houses are very much along those lines.
What Daphne ends up revealing to Velma on their call is that she now lives in Ridge Valley, Velma's hometown. She has moved there because her mom has been transferred to Bloom Innovative.
Yeah, Bloom Innovative has bought her app. I don't know. It's called, was it Matchmouth?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's never really made clear what it is, but I think it's supposed to be a Twitter, Facebook style thing. Bloom has bought out the
company that the company that Daphne's mom works for.
Yes, that she created. That she created the software for.
Okay, so
and now she's going to be a software engineer at Bloom.
Yeah, Daphne's mom now works for Bloom, and so she's going to her first day of work at Bloom. Daphne comes downstairs, has breakfast with her parents. It's a little bit of a weird scene. They just have some discussion about what it's going to be like for Daphne now that she's in this new school. She went to school in, like, you know, Australia and a bunch of other countries. Japan, I believe, is brought up at one point.
Rome.
Daphne's mom is talking about how she's kind of nervous to go work for this new company because she's never had a boss like Tobias Bloom before. Cut to school, which is a wild place. Daphne meets Carol, who seems to be this tour guide around the school. She's somebody who helps everybody get acquainted and acclimated to the school. Carol shows her around. She looks so much like Kristen Ritter. This is Vanessa Morano, mm-hmm. who we talked about being like a TV veteran. She's been in a lot of stuff over the years. But goodness gracious, does she look like Kristen Ritter.
She looks like a teenage Kristen Ritter. And the fact that she is a TV veteran comes up at the end of the movie in a very funny way. She meets her, and then we notice that, like, every time something bad is about to happen to Daphne, fate seems to intervene. Like, she's about to get hit in the head when a drone flies by, and she sees a button on the ground and bends down to pick it up. When she goes to lunch, she gets a California roll while everybody else has, like, standard cafeteria food, which I don't understand why the cafeteria food is, like, cartoonishly bad in this school that's, like, a super rich school, but whatever. Things like that keep happening, and Daphne mentions that she's just super lucky, which we thought was going to be her deal for the movie.
But there's a twist.
Yes.
A twist that happens much earlier in the movie than you would expect.
Yeah. A twist that could have been the premise of the movie had this not been a Scooby-Doo tie-in.
Another thing that Daphne finds out is that the school has a rolling, very complex, deep ranking system. There's a giant screen on the wall where a normal school might have a trophy case, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of a trophy case, this school has a giant screen that displays the rankings of every student in the school.
Yeah, they call it the Bloom bracket, but it's not a bracket. It's a leaderboard.
It's a leaderboard, yes.
And what it's based on is nebulous, but it's based not just on grades, but on grades and extracurriculars all around, like, who's doing the best at the school.
There seems to be a social component of it, too. It's everything. It yeah. takes into account everything in the student's life and ranks them.
Yeah. So they also have, next to each name is, like, a little 2002-era WWE matchup screen animation where, like, we see one of the kids and he's like, he, like, gives himself the double thumbs up and then holds up two fingers and then it kind of loops. It's very funny to me.
Currently, number one at the school is a young man named Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
He seems very smart. He's quite popular. We meet him right here at the beginning of the movie. He gets into a quick conversation with Daphne. Seems like a nice, fine young man. Daphne then sees Velma walking by and says, oh, Velma, Velma, I got to go talk to Velma. Carol reacts to that with shock because nobody talks to Velma. And Daphne says, oh, Velma's a friend of mine. And Carol's reaction to that is, Velma has friends? What we learn is that Velma has gone out of her way to put herself at the bottom of the rankings at the high school.
Yeah, she and also has, doesn't have her – like, she's not in the school's, like, social network that the school has. Like,
she doesn't have any of her personal information in the network.
Yeah, and this – actually, we see a little bit of this before the – like, before we get to Daphne going to the school, because when it pulls back after Velma is shocked to hear that Daphne is going to be coming to school and wants to be, like, her IRL friend, we pull back and Velma's got this whole conspiracy board up.
Yeah, there's an aspect of it where Velma is clearly suspicious of the environment at her school. She's also just kind of antisocial. She's grumpy. She doesn't really like anybody. And she keeps everybody at arm's length. So this version of Velma is not a social person. She doesn't have any friends, but not because like people hate her. She kind of hates everybody.
Yeah. No one actually seems to have, like, any bad will towards Velma, which I think is a nice little change. Like, she's very antisocial, but it's not like people are like, oh, Velma Dinkley, she's a jerk. It's just like nobody talks to her, and they're just surprised to find out that Daphne really likes her.
When we were watching this, I said something to the effect of, if I were de-aged and sent back to high school, 2018 high school, it would maybe be unrecognizable to me, partially because of technology, partially because teenagers are vastly different now than when I was in high school. And I'm going to say this. I think they're better.
One would hope.
I think they're better.
Teenagers, when we were in school, were pretty shitty.
Very bad. Very bad. I don't know how accurate this movie is to the 2018 teenager experience. But one thing that is not in this movie at all, really, is bullying. Even the characters that you think might be bullies aren't totally bullies. There's a slight bit of like verbal sparring at one point with some jocks in letter jackets.
Yeah. This happens later in the movie, but the jocks, like Velma gets into a mild altercation with the jocks. Well, there is the part where Velma like trips over the custodian's mop, and then there's instantly like 46 vines of it that people are putting up.
But gifts. Yeah, because they have like impact font on them.
Yeah, but there's a part where Velma gets into a mild altercation with this guy, and then he's like, because he's at the top of the Bloom board now, the Bloom bracket, and she says something and he goes, what do you care? You're like number 200. And then his boys are like, oh, and he goes, hey, I'm not making a joke. Like she's literally number 200.
Yeah.
And then they walk away and there's this weird conversation where all these bros in letter jackets are sitting around. And one of them's like, I'm just worried that I'm not going to be a good dad. And the other one goes, you're going to be a great father. Sometimes I wish you were my dad. It's really funny.
It's very good. The thing about the custodian with the mops, by the way, she's using three mops at one time.
Her character name is literally Three Mops Maggie.
That's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, because then when Velma trips and breaks the mop, all the things, all like the little gifts are about how now she's Two Mops Maggie.
Oh, man.
So
the only problem I have with that is that they're not like high-tech mops. They're just regular mops.
Yeah, well, there's also a part later on where Velma talks about distracting her so they can go poke around the school, and she's like, yeah, I spilled something two halls over. But it's not mean. Maggie loves spills. It's really funny. But the big thing that happens in the scene is that Daphne sees Velma, and she's like, hey, Velma, and Velma won't talk to her. Like, Velma is not interacting with her, ignoring her, making excuses to get away from her, kind of being mean to her, which Daphne does not understand because they are online best friends.
Later that day, Daphne happens to see Spencer, who is number one at the school, open up a locker. A glowing light is coming out of the locker. Spencer walks into that glowing light. The locker closes behind him. It's very strange.
Yeah.
As the locker is closing behind Spencer, a very weird thing happens to her. She runs into her dad at school. And she is extremely confused by this. And her dad tries to make an excuse where he was like, oh, I thought I was supposed to pick you up. But clearly that's not working. So they all go back home, and Daphne's dad explains, okay, here's why everything seems to go perfectly for you, and you seem to have such great luck. I'm around all the time.
Yeah. He has been literally following her in stealth mode, arranging events to make her seem lucky as a way of taking care of her. Like, he's the one who put the sushi on the cafeteria shelf right before she got there. He, like, threw the thing onto the ground so that she would duck instead of getting hit in the head. And this has been going on for her entire life in every way. Like, when she wakes up, she is awoken to, like, a violin serenade and then tells Siri or whatever, like, hey, play my pump up playlist. But that's, like, it's all her dad. And so yes. This girl who thinks she has been supernaturally lucky all her life has just been, like, helicopter parented.
He is trained in fashion. He went to fashion school.
So that he can pick out her clothes. She thinks she has a magic robot closet.
She thinks she has a magic robot closet that her dad is actually operating. So that she dresses immaculately every day.
Mm-hmm.
She's very upset by this. But eventually they just come to a conclusion of like, Dad, don't help me with anything anymore.
Yeah.
So the next morning she wakes up to a normal alarm sound. She goes and gets dressed in her closet normally, and she puts on Daphne's clothes from the cartoon.
Yeah. Which don't last long. And we get kind of the thing that I hate where – like someone sees her in her cartoon clothes and is like, that's not a great outfit.
It's Carol who says that to her.
But then later on, Velma is like, actually, that was a great outfit. So.
Yeah.
And it should be noted, Velma and Daphne don't wear their cartoon clothes, but they do exist within those color palettes for the most part.
I think they each wear their cartoon clothes once.
A lot of chunky sweaters.
A lot of chunky sweaters.
A lot of overalls.
There's a whole sequence where they're both wearing overalls of a type later in the movie. That is, they're interesting clothing choices.
Yeah.
After getting herself dressed and realizing that she can live her life by herself without her father doing everything for her, Daphne goes to school. She goes to science class where she tries to force Velma to be her partner in science class.
Well, Spencer was going to be her lab partner because he said the previous day, oh, you're so lucky. I want you to be my lab partner because that'll keep me on top of the board. But now Spencer is like a brain dead zombie. Like he can only say, I'm good, and doesn't say anything else, and ends up partnering with someone else instead of Daphne, who is more or less forced to partner up with Velma. Who does not want
Velma,
to be
Velma does not want to be her partner. But Daphne is telling Velma, something happened to Spencer. I saw him go in a locker yesterday. And now that he's apparently come out of that, he's brain dead. He's totally different. Something happened to him. And Velma sabotages their science project. She puts a bunch of stuff in a beaker. Then puts a rubber glove on top of that. The rubber glove explodes, and Daphne and Velma get covered in purple gack.
Yeah, Velma has a lot of gack-based science in this film.
Velma's science is entirely gack and robot-related. Because of this incident, they are taken to the principal's office. Now, Two things. One, the actress who plays the principal in this movie, whose name is Arden Mirren, who's been in a lot of different things, either sounds a lot like Amy Sedaris, and that just happens to be the way she sounds, or she's doing an Amy Sedaris thing in this.
Yeah, I was looking away from the screen when she first showed up, and she, like, I thought it was Amy Sedaris making a surprise appearance, which was very exciting.
Wild. How much she sounds and looks like Amy Sedaris in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing. I said at near the end of the movie, this movie steals some stuff, but when it does, it steals from the best.
Yes.
So, the principal, who we find out is Velma's aunt, which doesn't really play into the movie, really, at any point. It's just a detail.
Mm-hmm.
But the principal has these new agey, tech-heavy ways of disciplining her students. And what she is going to do is put the girls on the conflict couch.
So the conflict couch is great.
She sits them on this couch.
It's made of glowing cubes. It's
made of glowing cubes. And anytime it senses conflict, the cubes get closer together. So it brings the people sitting on the couch closer together until eventually when the conflict gets too ramped up, they are forced into the same space and cannot leave it until they resolve the conflict.
Yeah, and it's like a violent, like, shoving, too. Yeah. It's like a really good physical bit.
So when they're forced into the same space on the conflict couch, they finally realize that they need to work together to figure out what's going on with Spencer going into this locker and coming back brain dead.
Yeah. And Velma finally fesses up that, hey, something is happening to the top students here and has been for a while, and that's why I didn't want to be your friend. That part is pretty nebulous. I don't know why not being Daphne's friend would keep her out of the line of fire, but
it's your somebody's social standing is part of the ranking,
maybe.
I believe.
Yeah. So Daphne was staying away from Velma Velma was staying away from Daphne for her own good. Much like a watchful protector, a silent guardian, a dark knight.
Velma's very much like a dark knight.
Yeah.
This movie's the real Superman Batman.
It, you know what? It sure is.
Daphne's the Superman, Velma's the Batman.
Daphne's the Chris Sims, Velma's the Matt Wilson.
There's a new number one student. His name is Griffin Griffiths. He's one of the jock guys.
Yeah.
Here's part of the reason why the number one student thing is so competitive, by the way. It's not just like a valedictorian thing. Whoever is the number one student immediately gets an internship at Bloom Innovative.
Right.
So that's part of why the competition for that is so heavy. Daphne and Velma come to the conclusion that because Griffin Griffiths is the new number one student, and because he's got a family legacy to uphold, which isn't really dug into very much, that he must be behind these disappearances. So they start investigating him. But before anything can really ramp up with that, Griffin goes into the locker and comes out brain dead. So it turns out it can't be him. After this, a new number one student, Michaela, pops up on the screen.
Well, this is where the investigation really starts. And one of the components of the investigation is they have to figure out how to get through this locker, without cracking the lock. And the way they decide to do that is Velma's going to invent a locker melting device.
That's right.
And way she does this.
The way she does this is she smashes her pet robot that she made.
The line is, we see Velma in her house, which we see the exterior and it is kind of a mansion, so who knows. And she goes, "Sorry, little guy, you were a good robot, but your time has come. I really wish I hadn't programmed you with human emotions." And then the robot goes, "Velma?" And then she smashes it with a hammer.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Later on in the movie, we will see, like, when Velma, spoiler warning, when Velma decides to get to the top of the list to protect all the other students, we see her science project, which is called The Life and Death of a Robot, and she has rebuilt this robot. Then she winds up smashing it again.
Because she builds a bigger, better version of the robot.
Uh-huh.
Like a human-sized version of the robot. Because the original version is like, you know, it's like Funko Pop size.
Yeah, it's like a Funko Pop Johnny Five.
They try melting this locker, and what happens is that it works, but they can't find anything behind it. Now, the way that they get to the locker and try to melt it without anybody noticing is that they leave a presentation being given by Tobias Bloom himself, he's introducing his brand new technological innovation, like a big tech presentation, like a Steve Jobs, Apple presentation with the big screen behind him in the slideshow and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he explains that the last invention that he brought for beta testing were these very advanced, very good earbuds. His new innovation is a 3D printer. And when he says that, he stops after he says it's 3D printer. Somebody in the audience goes, lame! Like on cue. And he goes, you know what? That is lame. But what if my 3D printer printed food? 3D printer, print me a slice of pizza. And the little cube on the table creates a slice of pizza. He takes a slice of pizza and starts eating it. Then he says, 3D printer, make me enough pizza for everybody in this auditorium. And the 3D printer doesn't do anything at that point, but everybody in the crowd starts chanting pizza, pizza, pizza. And that's when Daphne and Velma sneak out to go melt the locker. He created the food replicator from Star Trek.
Yes.
It's pretty great.
It is great.
When they melt the locker, they don't find anything back there. So, as Chris mentioned a minute ago, the next plan that they come up with is to get Velma to the top of the rankings. And Daphne says to Velma, I can't possibly get to the top of the rankings, but you're so smart, you could be at the top of the rankings. How hard do you think that's going to be? And Velma says, oh, that's the easy part. The hard part is going to be, you know, in the line of fire. And then we see a montage of Velma just skyrocketing to the top of the rankings.
She basically turns in all of her homework for the year, which she apparently hasn't done, into a teacher, which, A, you can't do that. But the teacher looks at this stack of papers and goes, well, okay, but I'm not expecting much. Then he reads one sentence off the top page and looks up at Velma and gives her the, hey, yeah, nod. It's very funny.
How the teacher wouldn't think she would be good when she sabotaged her science projects by doing more advanced science?
Yeah, but nobody knows that. It is specifically mentioned by her Aunt Piper, the principal, that she used to be such a promising student, but then in the past year has just stopped.
Velma skyrockets up to number 2 on the board. And this happens not just through Velma doing, like, really good work. Also sabotaging other students.
Yeah, which is hilarious because there's a part where she goes, I can't sabotage the other students. And Daphne goes, it's to protect them. And then there's a montage of them fucking with all the other students.
They glue a girl's shoes to the ground.
Yeah.
At a track meet.
More GAC-based action.
Lots of GAC. So it's easy to get to number 2. But Michaela has done so much that they can't bounce her from the number 1 spot.
She has an art exhibition going on.
She has an art exhibition going on. They decide that the only way to get her out of that number 1 spot is to sabotage her art exhibition. So they go to the art exhibition. They're kind of arguing about whether it's okay to do this to this beautiful, quote-unquote, art exhibition. There's a city made out of, like, computer parts. It looks like a New Jerusalem, as Chris mentioned.
Got a real good laugh out of Matt in that. So they don't want to smash it up. They just want to turn off the lights so that it's not projecting the silhouettes anymore. But then they accidentally smash something as the people are coming in, and then Daphne and Velma hide, and we get the classic, oh no, I have to sneeze, but it continues to the point of, like, well past what is expected, when Velma goes, and it's really weird, because I usually don't have to sneeze. Like, I haven't sneezed in 7 years. And Daphne goes, okay, well, first of all, don't sneeze. Second of all, you should be sneezing more in your day-to-day life. That is very upsetting.
That's not healthy.
Yeah.
And then finally, Velma sneezes. And they are discovered. Then they are chased by a ghost.
Into a network of secret passages.
Yes.
Behind the walls of the school.
Let's not say ghost. Let's say cloaked figure.
A cloaked figure, yeah.
Because Velma reveals herself to be very much a Matt Wilson by saying that ghosts don't exist at this point in the movie.
Yeah. Probably a defining characteristic of a Matt Wilson type.
That's right. Daphne, on the other hand, absolutely believes in them. They are chased by this cloaked figure into a secret area of the school that they then realize is inside that locker passageway that they've seen other students going into. Eventually, they end up in this like weird control room with a big tube in it. Michaela is inside the tube.
Mm-hmm.
They try to get Michaela out of the tube. It does not work. So she is sucked up into the tube into somewhere. They don't know where. Then the cloaked figure encounters them again. There's a kerfuffle. There's also some like Scooby-Doo like running down corridors kind of stuff. Eventually, they realize that this cloaked figure is once again Daphne's dad.
Yes, who just couldn't resist coming to school and helping her out.
Yeah, he's wearing a bathrobe, as he calls it.
Yeah.
And he gives a very heartfelt speech about how he's actually proud of Daphne for doing all the stuff that she's doing to try to investigate this, because he's been watching this whole time. He's proud of Daphne. He's proud that Velma has come out of her shell, because he knows all about Velma now. Because, again, he's been spying. And also, he wasn't doing this because he thought Daphne was scared. He's doing this because he was scared for her. But he has enough confidence in Daphne now to know that she doesn't need help anymore. Also, you guys are probably onto something thinking that Bloom Innovative has something to do with the secret room, because the tube has a big Bloom Innovative logo on it. So, Daphne and Velma go to Bloom Innovative headquarters. They get in the elevator and are immediately confronted by their deepest, darkest fears.
Yeah. Okay. It's a scene where you just see their eyes in the darkness. And then other different colored eyes start floating around them and talking about their deepest insecurities. And
Such as, there will never be a woman president.
Oof, grim.
That's one example of their deepest fears.
Yeah. It's like, and they're like, oh yes, this is technology that exists.
Yeah, this is technology, not magic.
Yeah, yeah.
They end up fighting off this technology by being supportive of each other.
Which is very cute.
Very cute, very nice.
Yeah.
I like that a little bit.
All of Daphne's insecurities are like, you know, you can never do anything on your own. Your dad has done everything for you. All of Velma's insecurities are like, what if the mass of the Earth is too great and it collapses in on itself?
Yeah.
Which is equally what is going on in my head at all times.
And that way, you're a Velma.
Yes. I worry about the big picture and the small picture.
I also do that. I think we both share that. So eventually they finally get up to Tobias Bloom's office. They realize that there's nobody here.
Mm-hmm.
Daphne says outright, this is supposed to be one of the biggest tech companies in the world, and nobody's here. They go into the office. They find Daphne's mom with this like helmet on her head, essentially having her brain drained.
Yeah.
Because she's sitting there in a chair saying what the students who have been brainwashed were saying, where she's just like, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Then they are confronted by Tobias Bloom himself.
Yes. Who reveals that they're correct and that he has been taking all the good ideas from all the students and turning them into things. Like, one of the students was always talking about using his phone to make food, hence the 3D food printer, which doesn't seem like you would need someone else to give you the idea. Like, did he have the schematics in his head? But the
all you have to do is watch Star Trek The Next Generation to be like, hey, a thing that makes food.
The earbuds that he made came from the violin prodigy's knowledge of sound and music, etc., etc. Also, he has robot spiders like Gene Simmons did in that movie Runaway that he's going to use to kill them.
Yes.
A movie that also involved a bullet with your name on it that you could like shoot into a crowded room and it would hit the person whose name was on it. Why haven't we fucking done that movie?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it in 2019.
January 2019, Runaway, starring, I think, Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons.
Tobias Bloom should have never sent robot spiders after Daphne and Velma, though. Velma fucks up some robot spiders.
Yeah.
She won't have it. They get fucked up.
Yeah, she like karate kicks laser beams. It's pretty fucking cool.
This is a point where I said in this movie, Velma is, aside from not having a dinosaur, a pet dinosaur, Velma is not materially different from Gertrude from Runaways.
Yeah, she is a real arsenic.
Once they finally defeat the robot spiders, they discover that Tobias Bloom is in fact not a person. Daphne recognizes him as a popular model in Japan who is a model for a particular brand of soda.
Yeah, he's been modeling for ramen soda.
So he's not an actual person. And that's when they realize he's a hologram. The hologram fritzes out. They save Daphne's mom, and then they discover that the real mind behind Bloom Innovative is, in fact, Carol.
That's right. It was Carol all along. And it turns out that Carol couldn't handle the pressure of running this major company, and so that's why she's been stealing other people's ideas. And then they also find out that she's really 26.
Well, it's not that she couldn't handle the pressure. It's that nobody would take her seriously because when she started the company, she was a teenager.
Right. She basically made the iPhone. But then Daphne says that she couldn't handle the pressure of following it up. Because how do you follow up something like this clear hologram phone? The part where she's like, I'm actually 26. It's very funny. That's like a Josie and the Pussycats movie level gag.
It really
is. Because the next thing that happens is Daphne goes, you look amazing for 26. And Carol goes, 26 is not that old. Which is,
and then she also says, I moisturize. It keeps the skin young.
Yeah, which is extra funny because both Daphne and Velma are 22.
And the actress who plays Carol is actually 25.
Yeah, it's very funny.
The police come. They arrest Carol. Who, I guess she's going to be charged with fraud?
I mean, she has been kidnapping people.
Kidnapping. Kidnapping's in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what crime actually, like, draining people's brains would be. But luckily, everybody goes back to normal. Michaela's okay. Spencer's okay. Griffin's okay. Everything's back to fairly normal at school, even though I guess they're not beta testing tech anymore. I don't know where the money for them to be this huge magnet school is coming from anymore.
Well, presumably Bloom Innovative still has all that money. It's just that, you know, like, it's got to be an LLC, Matt, limited liability.
They had one employee. I guess they had two employees. They had Carol and they had Daphne's mom.
There had to be, like, there has to be an infrastructure for this company somewhere.
According to what they saw in the office,
that's
there is
just
not
one office. That's just the Ridge Valley branch.
Maybe Daphne's mom is now the CEO of Bloom Innovative. Whatever the case, school has mostly gotten back to normal. Daphne and Velma go back home, and Velma lets Daphne know that she has found a group of people that is going around solving mysteries, and they should meet up with them. So we think what's going to happen is we're going to see, like, Fred and Shaggy, right? Not what happens. Mm-hmm. Instead, their computer gets hacked by a real phantom in a real cloak. And then they say, we got to solve this mystery.
Yes.
End of movie.
End of movie.
Chris, what have you got for the high points of Daphne and Velma?
It's really funny. Like, it is,
it's really funny.
It's well acted. The gags, almost every gag lands. Like, I can't think of a bad one that's in this. And maybe that was going into it with kind of low expectations from not quite knowing what it is. But, like, there are genuinely funny gags in this that have a better success rate than several comedies I have seen recently.
I would agree. I feel like the writers and the director of this movie did way more than is required of a prequel movie about Daphne and Velma.
Yeah. I think the movie is clearly trying to kick off a new sub-franchise, right? Like, we could get a new Daphne and Velma movie every year for the next 5 years, like we did with Bring It On there for a little while. But
I think the movie very intentionally put off them meeting the rest of Mystery Inc.
Yeah.
At the end. So that maybe there could be another just Daphne and Velma movie. Which, one thing I said as we were watching this was, do I like Scooby-Doo if there's no Fred, Shaggy, or Scooby? Because apparently I do.
Yeah, turns out they are not the magic ingredients for the success.
Yeah.
So much more effort went into the gags in this movie than you would expect. It's like, and this is two fucking jaded ass mid-30s comedy people.
Yeah,
saying that
these are not just
good.
These are not just gags for children. These are genuinely funny jokes.
Yeah, and I think it's not like the sort of artificial distinction that you get with, like, a lot of kids movies, your Shreks, where there are jokes for kids and a heartbreak and jokes for adults. The jokes land. And the jokes are, like, perfectly good jokes that kids could also enjoy. The teenagers talking about how they wish they could be each other's dad is really funny.
And weird.
And weird.
Like, weird in a way that I love.
Yeah. Because it also is kind of heartfelt. Like, it's also like, hey, these jocks are actually, like, real people who are sensitive.
It bucks expectations in ways that I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that I pointed out when we were watching was that a lesser movie would lean harder into Daphne's dad being creepy,
mm-hmm.
right? This doesn't do that. The humor comes from him being really apologetic when he's found out, but him still wanting to guide Daphne's life and, like, make sure she's wearing good clothes. Because when she dresses herself, he's like, oh, she looks terrible. like those clothes are bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the humor from it. Not that he's a weird creep dad.
Yeah. I also appreciate that there are other characters in this movie. Spencer And there's Olivia, who's another student. So there is a supporting cast for Daphne and Velma that's not just a burnout and a jock guy that kind of are filling the Shaggy and Fred roles. You know, there's no talking dog either.
They're different characters. Oh. There aren't stand-ins for Mr. Ink in this.
But Daphne and Velma themselves feel like Daphne and Velma.
They feel like updated versions of Daphne.
They feel like they feel pretty close to like the Mystery Inc. Versions, which I think is, you know, kind of the prime version in my head, at least. Like an antisocial Velma and a rich Daphne.
Okay, so Velma is also antisocial in Mystery Inc.
A little bit. She's a little more sarcastic.
Okay. She's got a rough edge.
She's got a rough edge. She's harsh but fair.
Another thing that I think we have to point out as a high point of this movie is costumes. They are good.
The costumes are good. It is a visually interesting film, which we do not usually get on this show. We have, like, it's not just that it's competently lit, which it is, but, like, this was not theatrically released, surely.
It had some screenings at comic conventions and festivals.
Okay.
But I believe it was straight to Blu-ray digital.
Yeah.
Once it was widely released.
It'll air on Cartoon Network at some point.
Probably.
But for a movie of that sort of release pedigree, it's very, like, visually interesting. Like, it's obviously not high budget, but nothing looks terrible, probably because they're working within the budget they have. But it's still, like, people's outfits are interesting. The layout of the school is interesting. And, like, the posters they have, like the one that just says football.
I love that poster that just says football. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's really, like, it's a well-made film.
It's a well-made film clearly made on a budget.
Yeah.
Because they pretty clearly just have one hallway set, but they make it work.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what are our low points of Daphne and Velma?
The wigs are bad.
The wigs are bad.
The wigs are extremely bad.
We pegged them as wigs from minute one.
From minute one, which is weird because if you look at Sarah Gilman on IMDb, she basically has Velma's hair like in her headshot.
It's definitely a wig, though, right?
It's definitely a wig, and Daphne's is for sure a wig.
Yeah. At first, I thought it might have been a dye job, but her hair totally changes.
Yes, it is the worst part of the costuming, because it, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but it looks like someone dressed up as Daphne and Velma for a con, you know,
a little bit. Yeah,
it looks like an obvious costume rather than a character, I guess I should say. I have seen better Daphne's and Velma's IRL.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, there are definitely, Sarah Gilman has definitely had that haircut.
Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, it very much seems to be a wig.
Yeah. Also, the movie does falter you gotta get shit in, brother. There's a sequence that we kind of passed over where they do the doors, like they do the running away down the hallway sequence.
I mentioned it. I said they did some Scooby-Doo chase stuff, but yeah.
And there's a bit in there where Velma's crawling around without her glasses. Like, the movie remembers that Velma says jinkies around that point. The one good one is when Carol says, "I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids." Like, that is actually deliberate.
Because that comes after the gag about her being 26.
Yeah. But, like, it doesn't break the movie, but it does kind of make me, like, it does kind of make me wish this was a whole new movie franchise about these mystery-solving teen girls that was new and fun.
It feels shoehorned in a way that nothing else in this movie feels shoehorned.
Yeah, this could have been – do you know the comic Cat and Mouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, this could have been a Cat and Mouse movie.
Sure.
Easily. But, you know, I'm sure Daphne and Velma have the name recognition, but it doesn't – having it be a Scooby-Doo prequel doesn't actually add anything to the movie, because they're not really doing anything to tie in. I don't want this movie to tie in more to Scooby-Doo. The only thing they tie in is that Daphne's looking for real supernatural stuff and Velma's the skeptic. But that's it, and that's a relationship that is barely tangentially related to...
Yeah, they're not ghost hunters. They're tech investigators.
Yeah.
Tech mystery investigators, which is his own thing.
Part of me wishes this movie did tie in more and have more like Scooby-Doo stuff, but I don't know what stuff that could be beyond like unmasking someone at the end.
Yeah, and they unmask Daphne's dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that is in there. But personally, I feel like the movie almost does too much Scooby-Doo stuff. I would have been happy with less Scooby-Doo
stuff. Yeah, I think it's in that weird Uncanny Valley zone where no Scooby-Doo stuff would have been fine and a little more would have been fine. But now it's just like occasionally the characters will stop and turn to the camera and go, hey, this is a Scooby-Doo story, by the way. This is from that cartoon Scooby-Doo, which is weird.
What if they just walked by a dog that could talk all of a sudden?
I think that would be pretty wild.
Not Scooby-Doo, just a different dog.
Scooby-Dum.
We're just establishing in this world dogs talk.
Yeah. Or what if that was one of the other projects at the science fair?
All right, Chris, what are our final thoughts about Daphne and Velma?
I have the IMDb page open. This movie currently has a 4.3 out of 10 rating on IMDb, and that's fucked up. This movie is really good.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
This movie is way better than that. Who's giving this movie bad ratings on IMDb? Or is it Scooby-Doo fans who are like, not enough Scooby?
I don't know. Like, I part of this, I'm sure, is like, it's not Scooby-Doo. They took the dog out, which was my concern at the beginning. But I have to feel like if you sit down and watch this movie, it is at the very least better than you expect and better than average.
Yeah. You got to appreciate this movie for what it is. And what it is really good.
Yeah. Very fun.
Like, okay, here's a 6-star review on IMDb. I enjoyed watching... I'm just going to the last paragraph. I enjoyed watching this movie. I think it was shot well, paid its dues, and provided a unique experience. Paid its dues is a weird turn of phrase.
Go pay your dues, brother.
It could have used more Scooby-Doo references and things that made it feel like a Scooby movie. I guarantee you that's why it has a bad rating on IMDb.
Yeah, which I get that. Like, it...
Not Scooby-Doo enough.
Like I said, the biggest flaw in the movie is that stuff. I'm kind of looking for, like... I'm on Rotten Tomatoes, a site that I never go to, because I want to see if there's any, like, actual critical reviews of this. There's Common Sense Media. Did not care for it. but apparently... Daniel Sulzman of Sulzy at the Movies did enjoy it.
Holy shit. These reviews on IMDb are not... Boy, oh boy. Okay, here's a 1 out of 10. This was not even close to the Velma and Daphne we love so greatly in all the Scooby-Doo series and previous Scooby-Doo movies. It's so bad, I will have to watch the first original Scooby-Doo cartoons to get over how bad it is. I spent a hefty amount of money on this Blu-ray DVD set after seeing it. After seeing it, I felt robbed. It doesn't even catch the spirit of the characters themselves. 2 thumbs down.
Good God, this was awful to sit through. I had 5 minutes left of the movie, and I turned it off. I felt like I should have set fire to the $13 I paid for this. Watched it barely once, and I will never again. Very unfunny movie. Cheap-looking movie. Both girls are terrible at acting, and Velma... Oof. I don't even want to finish that sentence. Rude.
That is mean.
Yeah. Look, this movie's really fucking good, and these people are dumb.
It's all people who are like, it doesn't live up to the purity of Scooby-Doo. Which, personally, that's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's so, like, it's... I am looking at these IMDb reviews. And first of all, the IMDb reviews are like YouTube comments. They're meaningless spews of hatred.
Never read.
Yeah.
Here's one. Speaking of which, here's one. Who asked for this? The female future members of Mystery Inc. investigate strange goings on in their school. There's nothing worse than making a film out of about 2 out of 5 Mystery Inc. members, and when it's so obvious of why they even made it in the first place. Making a Scooby-Doo and Shaggy movie would have been a great idea, but nope, instead we got this. The acting was childish, and the plot was ridiculous, and the overall film bored me to death. Kids won't like it, parents won't like it, and casual fans will like it even less. A huge waste of time and money, without a doubt.
Two dudes in their mid-30s who like Beastmaster will like it, though. Oh, one more thing.
What I love about that review is that it says, how dare you make a movie with only 2 out of 5 members of Mystery Inc. A movie with Scooby and Shaggy would have been great, though.
Okay, two things. One, a Scooby and Shaggy movie would be trash. A Scooby and Shaggy movie would be garbage. There's no characters for them to play off of.
I would hate it. That would be torture.
Daphne and Velma are an obvious buddy comedy pair. They play off each other very well. Scooby and Shaggy alone, trash. Secondly, we forgot to mention this in High Points. The fucking – what are they? The shame stickers?
Oh, yeah. They get shame stickers the first time they're punished, which is just like stickers that are affixed to them with like a crying cloud on them.
And every time they are referenced or mentioned, there is a distant thunderclap, which is so fucking funny.
Then later when they get punished again for breaking into the locker, they are assigned the shame drone. Which flies around behind them and just goes, shame, 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 shame.
That shit, how can you think that shit is a 1-star gag?
That shit is hilarious. Yeah.
These reviews are making me like this movie more. Daphne and Velma is really fun, y'all.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. Watch it. Don't pay $13 for it.
Yeah, set fire to that $13, that hefty amount of money.
Just go to Hulu and watch it. It's very good. All right, everybody, that does it for this episode of Movie Fighters. We will be back in October with something spooky.
Oh, we know what it's going to be, too. It's going to be good.
It's going to be dope. It's going to be 2 movies we like in a row, which is rare.
Yeah.
Our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. The Snack Situation theme is by Matt Fisher. You can email us at moviefighterscast@gmail.com, and we're on Tumblr at moviefighterscast.tumblr.com. Once again, we will be back in October. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody.
We love you.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.